Red Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the Raindance Film Festival 2014, and I'm very pleased to be joined by filmmaker Brian Reddin, who is presenting his film, It Came From Connemara. Can you tell us, first of all, what the documentary is about?
So what it's about is, it's about the legendary filmmaker Roger Corman, who was a big, big independent filmmaker in Hollywood in the 50s and 60s, and still is today. He's still alive, he's still making films. In 1995, he came to Connemara in Galway and built a studio down there. And in the space of 5 years, from 95 to 2000, he made 20 feature films in Ireland, using local crew, local actors. People who had never made films before got a start with Roger Corman. And my film is called It Came From Connemara, in tribute to the kind of B-movies he made in Hollywood. And it's all about his time in Connemara making films.
So what was going on in Ireland at the time, cinema-wise?
There was a growing industry. I mean, you had Neil Jordan was making films. Like the year, for example, that Roger Corman came, the first film he made was called Blood Fist 8 with Don the Dragon Wilson, which was a kickboxing movie. That same year, Jim Sheridan made The Boxer with Daniel Day-Lewis. So Jim Sheridan was making films, Neil Jordan was making films, and it was the start of kind of like the second wave of Irish filmmakers, because in the earlier days you had people like, you know, Bob Quinn making movies and people like Joe Comerford making movies, and it was a long time before, you know, another, you know, movies were made on a bigger scale and made on an international scale. So it was really two people, Neil Jordan and Jim Sheridan, who kind of kicked in around the 90s, when Jim had huge success with My Left Foot and Neil Jordan had huge success with The Crying Game. That kind of had a whole renaissance. So around the time when Cormac came in, you had people like Paddy Brannock was making films, he was making I Went Down, and it was the start of something good. It was a great feeling that we were, you know, on the verge of something fantastic, you know.
Not to mention that people must have been excited about the fact that Corman had kickstarted a lot of careers in Hollywood, so why not, you know, in Ireland? Why can't the same thing happen to Ireland as well?
Exactly. I mean, Corman was well known as a guy who found talent and nurtured talent. So, for example, Francis Ford Coppola made his first film with Roger Corman. Martin Scorsese started off with Roger Corman. Jonathan Demme started off with Corman. Other people like James Cameron, Joe Dante, Ron Howard started off with Corman. And in terms of actors, Jack Nicholson made his very first film with Roger Corman, called The Crybaby Killer in the 50s. Bruce Dern, Dennis Hopper, Peter Fonda, later on De Niro, Sylvester Stallone. So he was, even Sandra Bullock, for example. Sandra Bullock made one of her first films with Corman. Peter Bogdanovich, the director, made one of his first films with Corman. So he was a great guy for finding talent, nurturing talent, and giving talent, you know, a shot. Like, very famously, Ron Howard made a film for him called Grand Theft Auto. Now, Ron Howard's probably best known as an actor, and he was Richie Cunningham in the Happy Days, and he's gone on to make great films like, you know, Apollo 13 and
Beautiful Mind
and, well, The Terrible Far and Away, but we'll pass over that.
Getting back to it, yeah.
Jesus Christ. One of the worst Irish accents I've ever heard in my life with Tom Cruise. Remember that one?
This land is mine.
You're a corker, Shannon. You're a corker. Whatever that is. Anyway, before he made rubbish like that, one of his first films he ever made was called Grand Theft Auto. And while he was making that film, Roger Corman was directing. And he starred in a Roger Corman film called Eat My Dust. And he didn't want to be in it, but Corman said to him, if you star in this movie, I'll let you direct a movie. So it's okay. So the movie he directed was called Grand Theft Auto. And during one of the scenes, Ron Howard went to Roger Corman and said, look, Roger, I need a lot more actors. I've only got, you know, I need some extras in the background. I got 50 extras. I need 1,000 extras. And Roger goes, well, you can't have 1,000 extras, Ron. It's not going to happen. And he goes, well, I need that. He says, well, it's not going to happen. You got to make do what you have. And at that point, Roger put his arm around Ron and he said, Ron, let me tell you a piece of advice. If you do a good job in this movie for me, you'll never have to work for me again. And that sums up Roger Corman. Do a good job for him. It's like a step. It's a platform to something better, and you don't ever have to work with him again.
You know? He said something along the same lines to Martin Scorsese too. There's loads of stories, but he was, of course, he was a really clever man. So there was reasons for him to start something like this in Connemara.
Yeah. Well, the reason he came for Connemara in the first place. I mean, he didn't come to Connemara because he had a great love of Ireland or grow for Ireland. The reason he came over was money. And what happened was, in 1995, the European Union, I think it was Media Desk or some European, pan-European film commission, had an idea that they were going to tax American films. So the idea was, if you came over as a big Hollywood motion picture and you were using Europe as a location, you were going to be taxed for doing that. So Corman heard about this, and Corman said, well, I don't want to pay taxes over there, and he was already making movies in Europe, so he wanted to see how he could get around that. So the way he could get around that was to have a base in Europe. So he wanted to create a base in Europe, therefore he wouldn't have to pay the taxes. So at the same time, Michael D. Higgins, who's now the president of Ireland, was the Minister for Arts and Culture, and he was very keen, he was very keen to develop arts and culture in Galway. So he heard that Corman was looking for a place in Europe, and he approached him and he said, why don't you come to Ireland? Why don't you set up in Galway? Corman's ancestors had come from Ireland. His wife, I think his wife's parents were born in Ireland. She had very good links with Ireland. So he had a kind of a grasp for Ireland. He had been here before. He had made movies in Ireland in 1963 with Francis Ford Coppola, Dementia 13. And again in 1971, he made a World War I flying picture called Von Rickenhoffen Brown. So he was familiar with Ireland. So it just all combined. And he said, right, I'm going to go. But it was financial. It was because he wanted to get around this tax law. Now, this tax law was never introduced, actually. So it never came to be. But his main reason for coming here was to avoid having to pay those taxes. So it was all about money, all about making money. You know?
And also adapting to it. You know, there was the whole Irish language thing as well. So.
Yeah, well, that was how. So he set up in Galway, and then outside Galway is a small Gaeltacht community called Connemara, where people speak Gaelic, speak the Irish language. And he got extra grants from the government from a company called Udras na Gaeltachta. Now, Udras na Gaeltachta are a grant-based organization who give grants towards the Irish language and to encourage the development of the Irish language and the promotion of the Irish language, the Gaelic language. So Corman got grants from them to set up right in the heart of Connemara, in the heart of a Gaeltacht area, and part of those grants were that, first of all, his company had to have an Irish name, so they were called Concord and Insurance, which means Concord Now Limited, and he had to employ Irish speakers. So a lot of people who worked for him spoke Gaelic. So Gaelic was often spoken on the set, often spoken amongst the cast and crew. A lot of the directions and all would have been given in Gaelic. The phone would be answered in Gaelic. The running orders were written in Gaelic, because he had to do that because he was getting grants to do that.
Obviously, well, we must say that, like, he didn't end up having as much of a legacy there as he did in America, obviously. But in a way, he did shape the Irish film industry, as we know. There's a lot of people that came out of it. There's a lot of people that learned, you know, the trade of the business, the tricks of the business there. So I'm just wondering, what do you think, you know, after all these years, since the whole... His activities stopped there, more or less. What still remains?
Well, a huge amount remains. I mean, his legacy in Ireland is phenomenal. First of all, there's an Irish language television station called TG4, TG Cahir, in Connemara. And a lot of the companies who work for them, who make documentaries, who make films, who make short films, who make dramas, which have gone on to win Emmys, they all started off with Roger Corman. Nearly to a man, every one of them started off with Corman. Some of our biggest broadcasters... people may not be familiar with, but a guy called Hector O'Hookagon is a big broadcaster. Evelyn O'Rourke is a big broadcaster, and they all started off with Roger Corman. At the moment, one of the biggest dramas in Ireland is called Love Hate. It's kind of a gritty urban drama that's directed by a guy called David Caffrey. He started off with Roger Corman. A lot of the people who work, a lot of Irish people went on to work in Hollywood. The production designer on Friends started off with Roger Corman. So, I mean, a lot of people who went over to Hollywood as production designers, as cameramen, as sound guys, as boom swingers, all started off with Corman. So there's a lot of people working in the industry today who began, like, one of the leading filmmakers in Ireland at the moment is called Terry McMahon. I don't know if you're familiar with Terry McMahon, but Terry McMahon has made two films. One's called Patrick's Day, the other one was called Charlie Casanova. He started off with Roger Corman as an actor. Okay. So he was acting a lot of films, but he learned a lot from Corman and from that style of filmmaking. So he went on to be a great director. So a lot of his cast and a lot of his crew are still working in the business today. I think on the last count, we reckon about 600 people went through his studios at some point. And I'd say over half of them are still working in the business today. So his legacy in Ireland, and particularly down in Galway, is still enormous. It's absolutely enormous. And everybody who worked with him, even though they worked long hours for pretty crappy pay, and even though the movies they made weren't exactly highbrow stuff, they all remembered incredibly fondly, because they were kids who wanted to get into the film business and nobody would give them a shot. No one would let them on a film. No one would let them anywhere near a set. And all of a sudden, there they were, working with Hollywood actors, shooting on 35mm, making full-length feature films, and turning them around 21 days. 21 days they were making a feature film, which is unbelievable. The guy was turning out 20 films in 5 years, a film more or less every 3 months, shot in 21 days, 3 months from conception to completion, and shot in 3 weeks, which is pretty amazing.
That is amazing. And of course, he's actually in the documentary, and he got to use a lot of authentic footage from his films too.
Yeah, I mean, he was very generous and very gracious. He's 88 years of age now, and he agreed to take part in the documentary. I interviewed him myself out in his offices in Hollywood, for ages. He didn't ask to see any questions beforehand. He didn't want to know what I was going to ask him. He just said, throw anything you want at me, I'll answer it. He was very, very keen to get involved. He allowed us access to all of his stills, to all of his behind the scenes footage, to all of his B-roll, to clips from all of his films. He gave us access to everything. He gave us access for a very reasonable rate as well, which we couldn't have made the documentary without that. And he was just really supportive of it. He tweets about it, he Facebooks about it, he Vimeos about it. So he's really, really supportive of the film, and he's been amazing. And like I say, he's 88 years of age, he's still making movies. Like, he's still making films for the Sci-Fi Channel. As I said to you, his latest one is called Sharktopus versus Merman Chula, which is a battle between the mutant offspring of a shark and an octopus versus the mutant offspring of a mermaid and a tarantula. And that's the kind of stuff he's making at the moment. But he's still making films, and the respect he has in Hollywood is phenomenal. Like, you know,
Yeah. He's
an amazing, amazing man. He really is.
He's really an important figure in the history of cinema, and we have to give him credit for that.
Absolutely. I mean, look, a lot of the films, certainly his Edgar Allan Poe adaptations, The Pit and the Pendulum, The Mask of the Red Death, what was the other one now? I can't remember. Whatever, he made about 5 or 6 Edgar Allan Poe ones, and they're amazing. They're really, really good films. Like, they're really strong, strong films. And then he made movies like Little Shop of Horrors or Book of the Blood. I know you mentioned Book of the Blood. We were chatting earlier on. It's a great film. Book of the Blood's a great movie. I mean, they all had really terrible premises, but they were great movies, really good movies. A movie called The Intruder with William Shatner, Hell's Angels on Wheels with Henry Fonda, and a great one called The Trip, which Jack Nicholson also wrote and stars in. Brilliant. So he was never really troubled with anything of aesthetic value. It was all about making a book and putting bums on seats. And he was a very clever man. His autobiography is called How I Made 100 Movies in Hollywood, Never Lost a Dime. And that's true. I mean, he never lost a dime.
Thanks very much for talking with us about it. It was a great pleasure meeting you and talking with you.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.